Welcome to Real Talk JavaScript, the weekly talk show that brings you stories of real-world development from industry experts and developers like you and me. Each week, Ward Bell, Dan Wallin, Craig Shoemaker, and John Papa find out what it takes to write, deploy, and maintain apps that stand up to the demands of the real world. And now, here are your hosts.
Welcome back to Real Talk JavaScript. This is an episode, a very, very special episode about a new service from Azure called Azure App Service Static Web Apps. And today I've got a co-host of Craig, the man Shoemaker. How's it going, Craig?
I'm good, John. Happy Wednesday. How are you?
I'm doing great. We're a minute into the show and we're already laughing. That's just a good sign, I think.
I think it helps set the stage well.
It does. I'm so excited for this special episode today because we've got two amazing guests on. I think we're just good if we get right to the guests and then we can dive right into the topic because it's a brand new topic, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Lots of good stuff to talk about.
All right, so let's welcome first Daria Grigoriou. How are you doing, Daria?
I am so happy to be here. Thank you for inviting us.
This is great to meet you. And we also have Mitch, or is it Mitchell?
I go by Mitch. Thanks, John. It's good to be here.
So let me introduce everybody to Mitch and Daria. Daria is a PM manager working on serverless technologies at Microsoft. She loves to create experiences that enable developer productivity and freedom from managing servers and compute infrastructure. And Mitch works with Daria. He's a software engineering manager at Microsoft. He works in Azure specifically, but he's focused on building PaaS solutions to host web applications. He works on a range of products from serverless computing options to network-isolated enterprise applications. That's a lot of big words, Mitch.
Yeah, it's a little bit of padding for sure.
Sounds like an impressive resume between the two of you. And today's topic, Craig, do you want to introduce what the topic is?
The topic is building web apps in a really easy and fun way.
That's cool. That should be the title of the show right there.
Yeah.
So, Daria, can you explain a little bit about what this new service offering is from Azure? Because it's one of the most exciting things I think I've seen come out of Microsoft in a while. I know I'm excited about it.
We are also definitely excited about it. App Service Static Web Apps is a hosting offer, and it addresses full-stack modern web apps written in JavaScript, with a single unified workflow that goes all the way from source code to global high availability. These apps can have just a front end, or they can have a serverless back end as well, powered by serverless APIs. And so we looked at the full scope and we built a solution that can address both the static content, the front end, and the serverless APIs in the back end.
So, Mitch, who is this for? Like, who is the target audience for this product?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think when we started out here, we were taking a lot of the problems that we've heard over years of our own service and really trying to expedite and fix those problems for a brand new set of customers. So right now, we're really going after JavaScript developers, trying to make their experience as seamless and as easy as possible, and then hopefully learn from this experience and move this experience towards both .NET Core, .NET, Python, any other kind of development that's going on. We want to have our stake in. So this is kind of an initial step in that direction focused on JavaScript developers.
So if I've got an Angular app, a React app, a Vue app, a Svelte app, vanilla JavaScript, Gatsby, Hugo, whatever else comes down the pipeline, can I take that and deploy that or publish it to the cloud with this?
You can. Yeah. The whole goal here is to encapsulate the JavaScript development experience and be able to move that to the cloud super easily.
So if you were to give like a day in the life of a JavaScript developer of, say, creating a new one of these apps and getting their first one up on the web, what would that look like?
Yeah, sure. So I guess I'll frame it from either a hackathon perspective or from a you just want to play with something perspective. But I might take one of my existing applications, which has some design to it, whether that is an Angular app. And so I have some specific routing. I might then take that repository, just fork it. We start from GitHub with this experience. We feel that starting from GitHub is a good place because it gives developers a lot of flexibility and also encourages kind of best practices. So I would kind of fork the repository that has my previous code, or you can start brand new. Then I would just go to Azure. I would set up the static web app. It will do all the linking to GitHub for me. At that point, I can watch and make sure that it deployed successfully. And from there on, I'm up and running in the cloud. And so then I could go and customize my code to match my need and publish it every now and then to see, oh, yep, it's in the cloud and it's what I expect. So I think kind of a day in the life, it is streamlining that experience. And once you're set up, it's really just doing a push and seeing it in the cloud.
Look, I feel like there's 101 ways to publish an app to the cloud these days, and I'm probably not far off, right?
Yeah.
Here you say the words streamline a couple times in here. Is that the key aspect that we should be looking at? Or like, how does this differentiate from not just Azure stuff, but what, you know, all the different cloud offerings that are out there? What is this really the main benefit for our developer audiences?
Yeah, so I think the main benefit here is it's a GitHub-driven experience. It starts from some source code that you might already be pushing to and delivers an experience in the cloud.
So you have some code. Let's say it's a React app and it's in GitHub, which is, I think, a pretty good assumption for a lot of us. And then you want to get that code up into the cloud. That's going to be hosted somewhere in Azure then with this service, right?
Yep, exactly.
Well, I was just going to say, so what's the glue that connects it from GitHub to Azure?
Yeah, so we are actually taking advantage of the new GitHub Actions offering. It's a full-fledged CI/CD system and has a lot of extensibility options. So we are actually using that platform as a way to build your content, build your application, bring it to Azure, and from there, our systems take it over.
So the code goes from GitHub through GitHub Actions to do some kind of a build. I assume it's assuming that there's an NPM script, in this case, a JavaScript for NPM run build. Is that right?
Yep. So we integrate with a platform that's developed by Microsoft. It's open source. It's called Oryx. And its whole job is to do repository detection. So it will take a look at your NPM scripts or YARM scripts, figure out your dependencies, and try to build it. Obviously, there's areas where it won't be able to detect things, and we try to do our best to surface those to the end user. But the whole goal here is for Oryx to be able to be smart enough to build your application and then use the GitHub action to send it to us.
And so this is going to, so if we're talking about a website, there's like, Daria pointed out, there's two different options here. You've got like the static content and then also an optional API thing. So does the Oryx do both of those pieces of it, or is there like a separate pipeline for that?
Yeah, that's a great point. No, Oryx can do both. So you don't need to worry about setting up multiple pipelines. You just have kind of an API structure. We use Azure Functions and define your function, and Oryx will take care of building it.
Let's take a quick break from a word from our sponsors. Hey Ward, you know, I was building an application the other day and I pulled in this really cool UI component, but it brought along a lot of dependencies with it. How do you deal with that?
I don't like that, John. It reminds me that the AG Grid, which is an advanced editable data table that we use in a lot of our enterprise apps because it addresses the complex scenarios we encounter. AG Grid doesn't have any dependencies at all.
Zero dependencies. Well, tell me, why is that good? Like, what is the value of having zero dependencies?
Well, it's wonderful not having to wonder if while I'm pulling that in, I'm also pulling jQuery in or Lodash or who knows what, in part because that's extra stuff coming over the wire. It's extra files that I don't know what they're all about. It means when my client security team has to evaluate this, they're evaluating AG Grid and not everything else that might be slipping in under the covers or something that we have to worry about there.
You know, it's great to see this day and age, you can have a zero dependency library that does something like complex data grid functionality. So all of you out there, do check out AG Grid at their website at ag-grid.com. And we're back.
One of the other interesting points about how Mitch described GitHub Actions is this workflow that we generate is actually part of your repo. So you have the flexibility to customize it, and you have the flexibility to tell us about your app, for example, where you chose to place your APIs or what build artifacts we may need to be looking for.
Okay, so if I had, again, thinking, just picking React because it works with any of these, but if I had a React app, I could tell you then, all right, my code is at this location in the repository for React. I assume I have to tell you where my built artifacts are, whether it's in a build or public folder, for example, right?
Yep, that's all we require. Basically, we want to give the developer as easy of an experience as possible. So we'll try to figure things out, as I mentioned with orcs. But we also allow you to do some customizations so that you can tell us exactly where your app and output folders are.
You know, it's really good to hear the customization side because, again, I do JavaScript in a lot of these. And one of the things different across all four is the folder that you store the built artifacts in. Whether it's public, build, or dist, in an Angular's case, it's dist slash and then another subfolder. So it's kind of nice that you have the flexibility to change those things to point somewhere else. And you know, what if you have a mono repo? You can actually store them in subfolders too. So having that configuration is something I know that developers will appreciate. But let's move one step further. So we've gone from, I wrote some code, I put it in GitHub. You're taking care of this build process with, I think you call the tool Oryx under the covers. Is that right?
Yep, it's Oryx. You can find it on GitHub.
Okay. So GitHub Actions kind of kicks this off. And then once the built assets are there, those built assets are sent to Azure. Now, once it's hosted in Azure, what are you getting? Like, there's lots of ways to classify a website and something you're hosting. What do people get out of the box?
Yeah. So part of the goal here was to take a lot of the benefits that we see in the app service platform and apply them to this use case. So out of the box, you get things like configurable server-side routing. So for people with React, you can specify how to handle client-side routes, how to serve custom error pages. You get authorization and authentication. So yeah, I'm sure we'll dive further into that, but we'll just call that out. If you use APIs, so you get this Azure Function integration for free. And it kind of just takes your source code and deploys it to a Azure function that we host and integrate with the app there. I think those are the main benefits. Oh, on top of that, you get just remembering what we offered. But on top of that, you also get role management. So you can assign users to your application and give them different permissions to interact. And lastly, you get free custom domains. So we allow you to bring a custom domain for your app, and we take care of all the work to make it SSL.
So Daria, what about speed as far as deploying all these different aspects of the application? I would imagine that comes into a big part of it as well.
It does, and it comes in multiple nuances. So the first one is obviously we try to make this as fast as possible and as easy to onboard as possible, so that you can get your app running quickly. We want you to focus on the business logic, and you don't have to learn too much about our platform or manage any of the infrastructure. So there's the speed of onboarding. Then we take your content and we geo-distribute it. So there's also this end-user performance that comes from the global distribution of the content. And also, there's the speed of iteration, because one of the features that we provide is we provision these pre-production environments when you submit a PR. So we listen to these GitHub events. And the moment you submit a PR, we know that you are going to need to review it. So we automatically can provision this pre-production environment for you, so you can iterate quickly. And we are there to support those iterations through the product features that we built.
And so does that work with like any PR that's put up on the repo, or is it restricted or filtered somehow, or how does that work?
There is a limit on the number of pre-production environments that you can have, but for the workflow itself, if you submit a PR, then we understand that you could use a pre-production environment, and then we give you feedback information on the environment that we created, the branch that we created it from, and where you can view it.
So let me follow, see if I follow the workflow. I've got a set of code that's already gone through this, and it's got a URL. Maybe I set a custom domain up of johnpapa.whatever to point to it. Now I make my own branch, and I want to make some modifications to my code. So I do that in a branch, and then I make a pull request to my, let's say it was in the master branch, the thing that was actually already published. I make a pull request to that master branch. Is that when I assume the GitHub action kicks back into play and publishes this new URL?
The master branch is presumably what you've provided to us for production. We ask you which branch you would like to deploy your production app from. And then we will look for other branches and we will do CI/CD to production. If we see changes submitted directly to the branch that you associated with production, and if it's a different branch, then we would look for a pre-production environment.
Okay. So that, I imagine the great thing there would be, the use case would be, I put something up there in the cloud, I'm happy with it, and then I make some changes, but I want to see it first live somewhere before I actually switch over. So these pre-production environments, I'd be able to get a URL, which would let me go look at that, which probably is a slightly different unique URL that I can go. But it doesn't take down my original site, right?
It does not.
Awesome. And then once I, let's say I'm happy, then I merge my branch into master, master would then rebuild and replace the original production URL, right?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, I like that. So it gives you a way of not only seeing, hey, it works on my machine, but is the new change I'm making working in the cloud as well? Because we all know it just works on my machine isn't always the same as it works somewhere else too.
One of the things that you mentioned earlier was custom domains, and dealing with them can be kind of hard sometimes. What's the experience like as far as setting that up?
Yeah, so this is a great question and a huge piece of feedback that we've gotten, that setting up custom domains can be tiring. If you want to do HTTPS traffic, which almost all sites do nowadays, to a custom domain, you need to have a certificate, and that certificate needs to be on some server where your website's hosted. And the server that's hosting that needs to know when this domain comes in, serve this cert. So it's a common problem and one that a lot of different services are trying to tackle. With our solution, what we're trying to do is allow you to just have a custom domain that you set up with your DNS provider to point to your Azure Static Web App resource. At that point, you can tell us, hey, add this domain. And we'll take care of all of the certificate and distribution problems that people often see in this scenario.
And so that includes SSL as well?
Yep, exactly. As soon as you add that custom domain, we will provision a certificate for you, distribute that certificate to our points of presence, and globally you'll have SSL.
So I can set up mybanana.com if that's open. I don't know. I just ate a banana, so I'm thinking about it. mybanana.com or .net or .whatever. If I own that domain, because I have to own it first, obviously, I can bring that to this. There's some configuration where I tell you, this is my domain. Imagine there's like an initial handshake somehow with a DNS.
Exactly. We do some validation that your DNS is actually pointing. We use a CNAME to our resource ID. Basically, when you create your Azure Static Web App, we give you a default hostname. So it's totally unique to your application. And when you come to bring your custom domain, we check that your DNS has set up a CNAME from whatever hostname you're trying to bring. So mybanana.com.
Like, yeah, like from GoDaddy or Google Domains or wherever you registered them. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. And we basically check that mybanana.com is pointing to your default hosting.
Yeah, you know, I really should visit that site before I say that. But
one of the terms that you threw out there that I'm not really familiar with is point of presence. What does that mean?
So point of presence...
Wait, isn't that the point where you give us presence?
Hey, it's like Santa Claus. I like it.
Christmas came early. But yeah, to answer your question, point of presence is a term that's used in content distribution networks. It basically is describing where your content is relative to some end user. So largely when we talk about points of presence, we're talking about having lots of them. So lots of different endpoints that are close to your users. And thus, when they go to your website, that download speed to get your content is super fast.
Okay, so it's basically geographical distribution.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
So I'm getting a little confused. I'm sorry. I want to straighten things out. We're talking about custom domains, SSL, points of presence. We're talking about our GitHub Actions doing the build, our source code. All this stuff kind of gets put together. Is like, we could do this before. I'm assuming the cool part of this is that once you set up the GitHub Action, it automatically builds and deploys all this stuff for you. Like, there, I assume there's not much left that you have to do, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Within Azure, all of these services exist. It's just sometimes not as easy to set them all up in the way that you want. We've kind of identified this as a common scenario and a scenario we want to make easy. And so for us, it's as easy as give us your repository information and we will set everything up and kick off a build.
Okay. And are there anything people need to know? Like, we've already mentioned this is fast and it's, you know, the development experience sounds like it's super quick too, but usually everything's got a pro and a con. Like, is there something you'd say, you know, don't use it for this or that?
Don't use it for production workloads yet because it's a brand new preview, but do send us feedback on what you find.
Yeah, that's a great point, Daria. So do you mind explaining a little to folks like what, when Azure talks about there's a preview of a product, what does that mean?
Essentially, what that means is that we are providing you with the first view at a product that we are lighting up. And while it's still in the preview stage, it could be at the fullness of features or it could be at full reliability, but we would like to caution you about using it for production workloads until we have marked it as general availability. And we have provided you with a definition of SLA that you can expect and hold us accountable to. So we definitely want everyone to try services within the preview timeframe because that way you can provide feedback and you can make sure that in the generally available version, your scenario, your app is accounted for. And we're absolutely ready to support you for production.
So that's great. I appreciate that explanation. So when we hear preview, we're saying send feedback. And this is and not just send feedback, but this is the time. Like when I hear those words, I'm thinking this is my chance to influence the product. So if you're out there listening to this and you feel like, hey, this sounds interesting to you, I could benefit from having something that deploys my apps in a very efficient way to a super fast website in the cloud, if that's something that can benefit you, then this is your chance to kind of send feedback to Daria and Mitch. Am I speaking out of bounds here?
That's actually a wonderful summary.
Okay, cool. And then once it hits GA, that's when you're saying we're going to have some kind of SLA. So meaning service level agreement of this is the level of uptime experience or scaling or whatever those happen to be, that's when the company will figure out this is what we support officially.
Yep, exactly.
Okay.
So when we're talking about in the context of preview and we know, you know, we don't know what's going to happen in the future, but is there anything that you could point to where maybe someone who's experienced in web development or maybe an experienced functions, Azure Functions developer would come to this and you know, maybe there's certain features they might expect to be there that aren't there? Like, where are the lines drawn in that regard?
Yeah, so I think I'll cover this, but the largest line that we have is for experienced Azure Function developers. So part of this offering is we are very focused on the full stack JavaScript experience. So Azure Functions is amazing and it gives you tons of different knobs and integrations and triggers that you can use to build all sorts of applications. What we're providing here is kind of a simplified view of that. We're taking care of kind of the management of the functions and the dependencies that they take, and providing just JavaScript functions, just HTTP triggers. So if you're not familiar with Azure Functions, it's basically a way for you to activate some code via a HTTP request.
So they can make their HTTP gets, post, put, deletes, etc.
Exactly. Those all work. So we are providing kind of a simplified view of the function in order to make this experience very streamlined and very focused.
So let's talk a little bit more about the API. But first, let's take a quick break for a word from our sponsors.
Are you building a web application? Need to deliver it soon and don't have the people to do it? Maybe you're not sure your company has the skill set or experience to do it. And maybe we can help. I'm your host, Ward Bell, and my day job is building applications for companies like yours. I don't do it alone. I'm president of IdeaBlade, a consultancy that specializes in enterprise web application development. We're particularly strong in Angular, RxJS, NGRX Redux on the front end, and .NET and Microsoft technologies on the server. We're a small, tight-knit group of people handpicked by me for their expertise, experience, integrity, and team spirit. Maybe we can help you with architectural guidance and hands-on development. And if there's something we don't know, and in our field, really, there's too much to know, we can draw on our personal connections in the Microsoft RD, MVP, and Google GDE networks, as well as our international circle of really great developers, people we know and trust personally. If you got a project that's keeping you up at night, shoot us an email at info@ideablade.com. That's info@ideablade.com. And now back to the show.
And we're back. And we were just starting to scratch the surface of what Azure Functions has to do with this offering. And before we kind of go further here, I'm assuming you're saying Azure Functions because when you have a web app, you often need data. So you need an API of some kind. Is that the role that Azure Functions plays? And could you expand on that?
Yeah, so Azure Functions in general is event-driven compute. And that means those events can be provided by other services, not just HTTP. In the context of a web app, the events are provided by the interactions with the API, so they are HTTP only, and that's why we are restricting the support here to HTTP trigger only. And we expect our customers to need not just APIs that they can use to evolve and expand their backend, but also to see those APIs keeping up with demand. And another interesting aspect of Azure Functions is that the event-driven nature also translates to dynamic scale. So the API will scale in and scale out based on demand to meet the expectations of end users of that particular static web app.
Okay.
And this works like any other API, right? Like you could go in and reference any node modules you want, basically do whatever you need to do once you're in the context and you've received that HTTP event for your API, right?
Right.
So how do you get one of these Azure Functions APIs? Like if I start out with my React app and I don't have an API yet, where do I get it? Like how do I make sure that the build process picks this thing up?
Yep. So that's one of the configurations that you can specify when you come and create your Azure Static Web App. That being said, if you start an application and decide halfway through, hey, this would be really good to have a backend as well, you can always add it later. Essentially, you can add some folder that represents your API and update your workflow file to basically let us know, hey, this is my API. I want you to turn this into an Azure function.
And so you would just create an Azure Functions app and put it in that folder and then point your configuration to it. Is that kind of the process?
Yep, exactly. And so VS Code has a really good integration to develop functions locally. So there's a nice story there for getting started with functions. And from the Azure Static Web App frame, really, we just need to be notified either during the initial create or later on that you want us to create an Azure function for you.
Okay.
Now, earlier on, I heard you mention that authentication or authorization plays a role in this, pun intended. You know, most web apps aren't just like, hey, anybody can come here and use my web app and do whatever they want with it. A lot of times we have might have parts of the app like that, but unless it's like a blog post type thing. But if we have a like a company business-driven web app, you might want to connect, you know, there's admins and there's this level of users and these kinds of roles. How does that work in this?
Yep. So essentially our service has some registrations with different auth providers. And what that allows us to do is we can provide simple ways for you to interact with our service, which can then interact with some auth provider, for example, GitHub, to negotiate basically somebody is some user. And our service on top of that provides some role management, which allows you to say this user gets this type of role.
And so how does that work? If you want to add a user to your website, what does that look like for the end user experience?
Yep. So we have a experience where you can generate an invitation for someone. So you would enter their information. So that might, let's say for GitHub, that might be their GitHub handle, and generate a invitation for some role. So Craig, let's say I wanted to add you as an admin to my site. Then I might generate an invitation for role admin, and I'm giving it to Craig. At that point, I can go send it to you. I know we talk over Teams, but we could also send it over email. But I send it to you. You can click on it. You can accept it. And once you accept it, you are now an admin on my site. So anytime you come and log in the future, our service will recognize you as an admin. And the reason that matters is we use those roles for a couple of different things. One is for routing. So I think we touched on this briefly before, but there is a way to define server-side routes. And so I could say, hey, I have some admin page that I only want my admins to see. And so I can actually make it so that the server will deny any requests if the user is not logged in and if the user does not have the admin role. So there's some nice flexibility there with the roles. Additionally, we pass this information to your Azure Functions. So if you are using Azure Functions that are provisioned through our service, we will add a header that gives you information about who is the current user that's logged in. And so this is really helpful for if you want to restrict APIs or you want to change the API behavior based on who someone is.
So, okay, so that comes in with every request. So if someone's logged in and they try to access the API, that header will be there every time. There's nothing special you have to do to make it appear?
Yep, that's it.
Nice.
So thank you both for coming on, Mitch and Daria. I think it's actually the first time we've had two guests on at the same time, Craig, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Because two is better than one.
Always.
So I've learned quite a bit about this product. I'm really excited to start using it because, to be honest, for years we've been trying to find ways to deploy apps to the web quickly and easily. And what I like about this personally is I'm a Node developer. And I develop a lot with Node in the back end. And I love JavaScript, but I don't always need a full-blown Node Express server on the back end. So I kind of like the idea of being able to put sites up that have APIs with serverless, and I can host the apps, and I don't have to worry about configuring and maintaining like a Node Express server on my own. That's just my personal preference. But I want to make sure everybody gets a chance to get a final thought out for our listeners today, too, in the audience, to learn more possibly about Azure App Service static web apps. So, Craig, I'll start with you. What's your final thought for our listeners?
I have a final thought that it's not product related or really germane to our discussion, but we always have tips and resources and stuff that we send people to. And there's this other podcast I listen to called Darknet Diaries, and they have this one episode where they talk about an exploit that was done by putting some malicious code into Modernizer. And I was just like blown away about how this happened. So if you look at for the episode on Magecart where they talk about that, I felt like it was the type of content, the type of approach that every web developer should at least be aware of. So if you're producing production apps, you know how to at least look for these types of issues.
Craig going all old school talking about Modernizer. I haven't even thought about that JavaScript library in years. Wow. And I'll put a link into the show notes for that transcript. I found it here. It's episode 52 called Magecart. Thanks, Craig. Daria, what's your final thought for our listeners?
I would really appreciate hearing from you and understanding your impressions about the product. And if you want to get started, you can go to aka.ms/static web apps and bring your apps from the simplest static apps to the more complex ones, and let us know what you think.
Awesome. Thanks. And Mitch, what is your final thought for our listeners?
Yeah, I think a lot of what I'd like to say echoes what Daria just said, but we've put a lot of effort and time into building this and trying to streamline some of the more taxing development stories. So if there's something that you think is missing or you are having trouble with a particular experience, please let us know. As John said earlier, preview is the best time for us to make changes. We can take a lot of feedback now. And so if you give us a try and run into something, please let us know.
Yeah, and my final thought for folks out there is we don't often talk about specific products on this show. And I really wanted to share this one because I am really excited about this. There's so much new technology out there all the time. And I often get asked this question, and this is really my tip for you. John, how do you know what to pay attention to and how do you keep up with technology? And my tip for you is learn how to figure out what not to pay attention to. There's so much coming at us. It's actually easier to say, I don't need this, I don't need this, I don't need that. Focus on getting rid of the things that distract you and look at the ones that are left. They're usually the ones that are the most interesting. And that's kind of how I landed on this product, is this solved a problem that I've been wanting to be solved for years of, I'd like this to be easy, fast, and efficient, and still be real. I mean, it still can handle real websites. So my tip to you all is give this a try and definitely use that tip and figure out when you're bombarded with social media and everything else going on in this world of 10 million things coming at you, try figuring out how you move things aside and what's left over is really the cream of the crop of what you'd be looking at and paying attention to. And with that, I want to thank Mitch and Daria and Craig, my co-host, for coming on. Thank you all so much.
Glad to be here.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much, John.
And for all of you, thank you for listening to yet another week of Real Talk JavaScript. You'll hear from us every Tuesday morning. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to Real Talk JavaScript. This show and all of our shows are available at www.realtalkjs.com with links and notes. John and Ward would love to hear what you think, especially about potential guests and topics for future shows. Follow and send them a message on Twitter @RealTalkJS.